everyone, and welcome to my podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Benson, and this week, we're going to be talking about rural education on the Dakota Plains, and the important role that women had in the success of education on the plains. We will also be talking about women's roles in teaching then and now. During the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, education became considerably more significant. Education also started to have a more far-reaching effect. Women on the Dakota Plains had many important roles in education. Education was continually changing and evolving. Rural Midwesterners pushed towards educational expansion throughout South Dakota. Education persisted with the help of many dedicated women teachers whose fundamental values were to educate their students. While it's important to understand that women were the driving force behind one-room schoolhouses, it is also important to understand how education came about and how education began in South Dakota. There were few people who pushed towards free and equal education. James S. Foster and William H. H. Beadle were some of the most prominent leaders in education on the Dakota Plains. The educational progress during the territorial period was closely linked with the work of James S. Foster and William H. H. Beadle. Foster may be regarded as the founder of the state's public school system. He was appointed to office in 1864. James S. Foster was a member of the New York colony. He brought to the office a wealth of experience that he gained in schoolwork before his arrival on the Dakota frontier. He showed zealous devotion to the ideals of education, and he made careful study of the school's situation, and within a year was able to report substantial progress working on the public school system. William Beadle started a successful campaign for saving school lands. He insisted
that no school sections be sold for less than $10 an acre and that only a limited number be placed on the market in any one year.
There were many problems with starting an educational system, but the largest problem was where the money would come from. There was no tax levied and no school monies of any kind collected. William Beadle, a successful advocate for education, worked for land to be saved for schools to be built. Before William had begun to do this, Congress was already thinking of the Dakota Territories and education. In the bill creating the Dakota Territories, Congress set aside 1/18 of all the land in the territory for school purposes by pledging to give Sections 16 and 36 of each township to the control of the state to be used only for school purposes. This act by Congress was known as the Land Ordinance of 1785. The ordinance declared.
Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools, and the means of education shall forever be encouraged.
Understanding how education got its beginnings is important in understanding the push for education to continue to grow. The Midwest continued to grow as people started towards westward expansion in search of a better life. As the settlers increased in the Midwest, the number of school districts increased, and by 1868, educational work had begun to function on a high plane. As education became more of a necessity, women going to college became normalized as well. South Dakota had colleges in almost every part of the state, which meant that teachers were able to receive an education and pursue being a teacher. Having these schools placed throughout the state was a benefit for education. Teachers in South Dakota had obtained a teaching certificate to be licensed to teach in a South Dakota school. Most teachers in rural schools had to be able to teach all the general courses, such as arithmetic, rhetoric, grammar, and the sciences. Teachers were not just focused on one subject area. Many teachers gained their teaching certificate from the Teachers Normal Colleges located throughout South Dakota.
Margaret Myers Anderson went to Western Normal College in Spearfish, South Dakota.
Now the teachers' normal colleges are still colleges to this day, one in Madison and one in Spearfish.
These universities were known as Western Normal College, Eastern Normal College, and Northern Normal College. These universities are now known as Black Hills State University in Spearfish, Dakota State University in Madison, and Northern State in Aberdeen. These colleges are known for their outstanding teaching programs. Many rural school teachers had never stepped foot inside a country schoolhouse before they began to teach. Stella Anderson went to Vermilion College and took the teacher's exam without taking any classes. She secured a one-year teaching degree. Many times, these teachers had just graduated high school themselves and were expected to take on the role of teaching with just a few months' preparation. Teachers like Stella Anderson and Margaret Anderson had to step into big roles at a young age. Stella Anderson and Margaret Anderson were women who were passionate about education and educational programs. Many schoolhouse teachers have very interesting stories and were able to share them by writing them down in journals or through recordings. Now we're going to hear from Stella Anderson, who details her move to South Dakota and the many experiences that she had as a teacher here.
Just after I finished high school, and I stayed home a year, and then I decided that I'd already heard about the teaching out here was, they were paying more for teachers than they did in Wisconsin, so I thought it was an opportunity to get out here and start teaching out here. And so I did. My father got me passes to come and go home during the vacation. And so that's how I got started in teaching out here.
What kind of training did you have to be a teacher?
Well, we needed a first, second, or third grade certificate to teach. And so I came out one summer after I had finished high school and stayed home for a year, came out here and went down to Vermilion and went to institute down there and took the examination, teacher's examination for first, second, or third grade. Next, that was only good for 1 year. Then I took it the next year and got a second grade, and then that was good for two more years, and then I took it again and got a first grade.
By this time you knew South Dakota history.
And that was, yes, in South Dakota.
Stella's first teaching job was in a one-room building with a coal-burning stove that was not large at all to heat the whole place. At the time of her first job, she had 12 pupils come to school. Miss Anderson, like many teachers, boarded with a family near the school and paid the family $10 to $12 for room and board. She had to walk a mile to get to school every day. One of Stella's favorite memories was that of the basket socials that they held.
We used to have basket socials there, and that was about quite a little fun.
What's a basket social?
Well, the ladies went and took baskets. Sometimes they described what their fancy baskets. Describe what they were like to their boyfriend or someone else, and someone that they liked to have by their basket. So we had lots of fun with those basket socials.
What was in the basket?
Well, we had a regular lunch in there. Sometimes fruit and sandwiches and cake or cookies. It was usually a good lunch.
And they'd bid?
Yes, they bid. These? And they'd sometimes go up pretty high, the baskets.
Like how high?
Oh, up to $10.
Oh, really? Yeah. What did you do with the money?
When two boys would be bidding on the same basket.
Competition was great.
Stella actually met her husband Chris at a basket social.
How did you meet Chris?
Well, I met him at one of these basket socials that we had. He did the highest. Yeah, I guess he did. He got my basket anyway.
Stella loved all of the kids that she taught.
Track of any of them?
Oh, yes. I keep track of them. We had, I and my husband celebrated our 60th wedding day. And I think there were about 20 of my former pupils there. And they all got up and made speeches. And it was real nice.
And now we'll hear about our next rural schoolhouse teacher, Margaret Myers Anderson, who left journal entries about her experiences in South Dakota. Anderson graduated from Fort Pierre High School in 1912, then continued her education at the Spearfish Teachers Normal College. Anderson lived with the host family her first year of teaching. The father of the family she lived with was the county commissioner. Anderson lived 3 miles from her schoolhouse. Her school was in Shaner Township. There was also another school about a mile from hers. She had 12 or 13 students, but not many classes, though. Her school was 8 months long, and she started out making $10 a month, which was pretty good for a rural schoolhouse teacher. It's no secret that winters on the Dakota Plains are especially harsh, and now we'll hear from Anderson about her experiences during the winter time.
I went to go to the schoolhouse one morning and couldn't find the school. It was buried so deep in the snow. Keep in mind, it was only November. In January, it gets very cold, and there was no way to tell the temperature. I woke up one day and knew it felt particularly cold, but I went to school anyway. None of my students showed up to school that day. I later found out that the weather was negative 40 degrees below wind chill.
This was normal for rural schoolhouse teachers. They had to show up to school just in case any students decided to show up that day. During blizzards, school teachers weren't allowed to let students leave the schoolhouse, so she spent many nights at school with children. Every county was different when it came to the rules and regulations placed on the teachers. Generally, the ruling for teachers' degrees was set by the Board of Education in each district. The board members decided who would teach and what the qualifications were. Board members consisted mostly of residents with children to put into the education system. Many opted to participate in their child's education by becoming board members. The school board men kept a close watch over the affairs of the local school. Barring women's voices from the school board, matters happened often. Women were not allowed to have a voice in how the school was run, but they could teach the children inside of the schools. As the teaching profession feminized, women's enforced silence on educational issues became an absurdity increasingly difficult to rationalize. The Plains regions were the first to let women vote at school district meetings. Then, the Dakota Territory made it legal for women to hold office of county superintendent of schools. A female teacher cost the district somewhere between 30% to 50% less than a male teacher. The assumption made by male school board members was that a male teacher with any qualifications was superior to a first-class female teacher. Public schools, and to some extent their administration, were deemed to be the limits to which women could participate in public spheres. It was highly unlikely that a woman would have a job outside of the house, unless it was teaching school. Once a woman became married, she left the teaching profession to stay at home and raise a family. Country school teaching became thoroughly feminized by the 19th century's end, and men turned to teaching almost out of desperation during this time. Not very many men were becoming teachers during this time, so women had to step into the roles of educating the young children. And still to this day, we see more women educators than men in elementary schools. I spoke to Jean Benson, a K-12 music educator, about her experiences as an elementary student and her experiences in her own building about the women teachers in the elementary. So I'm here with Jean Benson, K-12 music teacher at Chester. Jean, when you were in elementary school,
Did you have all female teachers or female with male?
When I was in elementary school, I did have an all-female set of teachers that taught me. I did, however, have a male principal in elementary school.
How about now at the building you work at? Are they all male, all female, mixed?
In the building I'm at now, currently, we do have an all-female elementary teaching staff. And it hasn't always been that case. We have had men come and go through the elementary positions. But I tend to see more male teachers in the middle school and high school level. And I think that reason differs maybe a bit from when I was in elementary school till now. I think back 30 years ago that because it was such a supplemental income, that it was a really great job for, you know, a wife to have, a female to have. I think that's maybe what lended itself towards more, you know, females being elementary teachers and maybe more men being administrators. And I think now you have an equal share of young men going into the teaching field, but I think they also are involved in coaching and after-school activities more often than not, and you don't find that those positions oftentimes go with lower elementary positions, and so I think they're in the middle school and high school more often.
Thanks to Jean for sharing your experiences. We know that male teachers do a lot for education, but without rural women teachers, education might not have been what it is today. The push for education by a few key people led to the expansion of education all around the Plain States. The encouragement of women to gain their teaching degrees also played an important role in the development of education. Without the success of the Teachers Normal Colleges throughout South Dakota, teacher certification would not have been accessible, and education would not have been able to achieve its far-reaching effect on the Midwest. Many influential people played important roles helping education integrate into the daily lives of Midwestern people. These roles were embraced by women teachers and significant people involved in education. Teaching has evolved to incorporate both men and women alike, but rural education got its jump start with the many dedicated women teachers that were into it. Education on the Dakota Plains continued to improve and grow tremendously with the help of these women teachers who wanted to see education succeed the most. Thanks to the Center for Western Studies Archives for the oral histories and journals of these retired teachers and the research done for this podcast. Once again, I'm Sarah Benson. Thanks for listening.